X1. Mary Baker Eddy as a Divine Scientist. Number 1A.
Today, I would like to talk to you about the following subject, Mrs. Eddy as a scientist. Is Mrs. Eddy a founder of a religion, or is she a discoverer of a science? It is quite clear that Mrs. Eddy did not really found a new religion, but actually a new science with a religious aspect, because what she really primarily discovered was a science, and she calls it like that. It is Christian science, and through all her textbook the term science stands out, and always in a positive way, never in a negative way, whereas she speaks positively and mostly negatively on religion. She never used, like the Christian Science movement, the term the religion of Christian Science. This was, so to say, foreign to her, though naturally she was speaking about the theology of Christian Science, but that is natural because fundamentally what she discovered was science, and that science has many aspects of sciences. Therefore, in her textbook, she would talk about the theology of Christian Science, but much more she would call the medicine of Christian Science. She would attach to science many other terms than just theology. It was the science of mind and the science of spirit. It was the science of life and it was the science of love. It was really what she discovered, the science of all sciences. So theology or religion is just one aspect of her discovery, but a small aspect, and fundamentally her discovery was science, and therefore she wanted really to establish her discovery on a scientific basis, and therefore with scientific institutions. She wanted to see really Christian Science taught in educational institutions, in schools. Her first move was towards teaching and not towards religion. Church was a sideline, and as we have seen this week, a sideline which she has taken on practically under the pressure of her students. So the criteria for her discovery is understanding and not church service. It is understanding, instruction, teaching, schooling, institutions of learnings. That is foundational. Very often one thinks that, yes, what Mrs. Eddy has discovered is a new religion, but actually what she did is that she tried to lift religion out of religion and lift it up into the field of science. This one sees very clearly. When one asks oneself just what is, in a few words, actually the main point of her discovery, what are those main aspects that she introduced compared with the preceding age? And so we can perhaps just quickly run through it in order to see how she tried to lift religion out of a religious sense into a scientific sense. Starting with the term God that is usually connected with religion, she lifted that term God out of the religious connotation and put in place of it principle, and said so often that it would be good if the term God could be eliminated out of the teaching of Christian Science because it's misleading. It always draws the attention of the student to a God back to religion, whereas she could see that the universe is governed by a divine spiritual principle, and that principle is actually the divine mind. Principle, mind are those two synonymous terms which she introduced into the biblical language. The Bible has accepted already that God is spirit and perhaps even soul, but certainly life, truth and love. But what she introduced were those scientific terms, principle and mind. Principle, the principle of any science and which needs a science mind that would show that it has to do with understanding, that this principle had to be understood and not worshipped. Also, if we take up the second side of the Holy City, the Christ aspect of her discovery, we can see that she lifted also the religious sense of Jesus Christ out of the religious connotation and made clear, I guess for the first time in human history, that actually Christ is the main moving power, and not that we should just worship Jesus, but it's the Christ. And what is the Christ? Even there she lifts it out of the biblical terminology and says it is the true idea, and you can see that she brings in the scientific terminology of the true idea, and in this way liberated the whole office of the Christ from the religious terminology. She was the first one, therefore, to show that Christ and Jesus are not synonymous, as in religion, but that we must make a very clear distinction and consider really the true idea of the divine principle as the Christ. Also, when we look at her discovery from the point of view of Christianity, therefore from the point of view of man and the universe, then we see that she lifted man out of the religious connotation and terminology and language, man as a mortal, as a sinner, as fallen. She lifted right out, not to a higher concept of the mortal, but right out of the mortal human connotation into the realm of idea. Man is now no more man. He is now the idea of the divine principle, the compound idea. So instead of man, we have the compound idea, and this changes naturally our concept from the religious sense to the scientific sense. But not only man as idea typifies her scientific approach to Christianity. There she was the first one to lift out the universe out of a material concept into a spiritual realm. She could see that reality is absolutely spiritual, that reality is of the nature of idea, and so introduced a scientific concept that we have to do with the investigation of ideas. Not only was spirit now the real and the only, and matter the unreal, but also our conclusion, namely that therefore all that happens within the material realm is therefore erroneous. Can you see? Here again, she brings in the scientific aspect of truth or error. She is no more considering what is sin, sickness, and death as phenomena, but she looks at it from the scientific aspect and asks, is this true or is it error? Therefore, again, the scientific description of these phenomena. If you look at it from the point of view of the fourth side of the Holy City, from the point of view of understanding, there, naturally, we see very clearly she lifts her discovery out of ritual, of dogmas. She lifts it out of church and church services, church organization and everything, and makes it a matter of understanding, of scientific consciousness, therefore a matter of the individual's understanding of his principle, the unity of understanding with his principle, without any mediator in the form of a man called Jesus, without the mediator of an organization, without the mediator of a person called a practitioner or anything like that. She showed the unity of principle and idea when understood. So can you see, if you take the main contribution of Mrs. Eddy in regard to the religious connotation, then we can see that she lifted it right out into a science, and therefore Mrs. Eddy is primarily a scientist and not a founder of a religion. What kind of a scientist is Mrs. Eddy? This is now the great question, and this is the question which I want to discuss this morning. What kind of a scientist? And in asking this question, I have to fall back on what we discussed last year in the class when I began to categorize, so to say, the aspects of a science, where we took as a basis for discussion and for terminology really Thomas Kuhn's book on the structure of scientific revolution, in which he showed how every science must evolve and how it does evolve. And we have seen last year that this structure of scientific revolution applies to Christian science just as it does apply to any other science. Just to repeat, just quickly and pinpointing there, we could see that any science at a given point is accepted as normal and therefore is called normal science. Normal science until when? Until somebody comes along and finds an anomaly. When he finds an anomaly, he's thinking along a new line and therefore finds a new paradigm. A new paradigm. The moment he finds a new paradigm, he is called an extraordinary scientist. Extraordinary science. And that extraordinary science, after a while, is then accepted by the community as being normal again. It may usually take about a generation or so, and then it is again accepted as normal science until somebody comes along again and sees an anomaly and goes and searches in a new way and therefore puts up again extraordinary science. And if this rhythm goes on for a while, we have to do with what is called ripe science. Now, on this ground of orientation and classification, I would like to talk about Mrs. Eddy as a representative of extraordinary science or ripe science. If we don't do that, then we always try to investigate Mrs. Eddy's textbook from the point of view of normal science and never really from the point of view of extraordinary science, therefore not seeing that she was not a normal scientist for her time, but an extraordinary scientist, a ripe scientist of her time. When we study her works, and especially I refer to the textbook as the basic teaching, then we can see that Mrs. Eddy went out and built, so to say, on the fundamental aspects of a normal science before we can see really the higher meaning as extraordinary science. What are the characteristics of normal science? And do we find these characteristics in the textbook? Yes. We see, as we have seen yesterday, that Mrs. Eddy goes out from the classical reasoning. Therefore, from classical logic. In her reasoning, or in her presentation of this new science, she actually uses reason and not just any other way of learning and investigation. She uses reason. She says reason is the most human faculty, that's the most efficient human faculty. She uses in her reasoning the method of deduction, the method of induction. She uses syllogisms in order to state her case. She uses the law of cause and effect. You see, all those things that are common in normal science. She uses the method of analysis and uncovering and annihilating like in any other normal science. Her science is also pragmatic. It's a science that is applicable and therefore a theory that is good enough to be applied. She therefore applies it, makes, like in normal science, experiments, made tests, and looked out for proving through her tests the principle she has been presenting. So in this way she has taken the groundwork of any normal science, but this is not enough. She was really an extraordinary scientist because she found in her time anomalies. And it is those anomalies that really made her to be a great discoverer, discoverer of highest magnitude. What were the anomalies which she discovered and to which she gave really investigating thought? It was that she could see that miracles, wonders, could not just be a gift of God, not just a exception from the rule and the laws, but that she felt that miracles must be not miracles, not wonders, but they must be laws of a higher order, laws which were not known, and therefore she wanted to investigate those laws which were not known, in order to do what? In order to show that that which is called miracles are actually nothing else but phenomena of a law, therefore could be repeated, therefore could be learned, therefore could be taught, therefore could be demonstrated by everybody. In order to investigate this anomaly, first she could also see that these laws must be of a higher order than the material laws, and so she introduced for the first time, so to say, the hypothesis that there are spiritual laws, and then through testing and through proving could find out that these spiritual laws are actually not just hypotheses, but that they are underlying laws in being. In being, in what kind of being? In the spiritual realm. So she introduced as an anomaly the fact that the spiritual realm is the real realm, and that the material realm was just a kind of shadow world, was the counterfeit world, that by the law of opposites, the universe, the material universe, simulates really the laws of the divine mind, the spiritual laws. And so she opened up a new realm, the realm of the spiritual. So in this way, she introduced extraordinary science, showing that we have to get out of the concept of a material science, a science built on matter, but that actually we should see that there is a much greater realm, the realm of reality, consisting of spiritual ideas. So when she saw that ideas are the true facts of being, she naturally began to investigate the laws of these ideas, the science of ideas. That was absolutely new. That had nothing to do with a religion and had nothing to do with any normal science. Because normal science was still at the point where science was defined as the investigation into such a realm that can be testified by the material senses, that can be proved to the material senses. Therefore, she began to realize that there must be a science of spirit, but even more than that, she began to realize that science is not just descriptive like any other science describes something outside objectively, But she began to see that this science, because it's a spiritual science and therefore not limited in any way, is also the science of being, the science of life. And so we can understand why she said that she discovered Christian science at the point of life in and of spirit. In this way, she was naturally far advanced to the age in which she lived. And even today, 100 years later, we only begin slowly and gently to feel that the world is approaching gently this new paradigm, extraordinary science, that up to now the world still has resisted, that life is in and of spirit, and has still accepted that life is in and of matter. Let's therefore have a peep, so to say, at the science of spirit, and then on the science of life. What did she introduce as a scientist, as an extraordinary scientist? At her time, she not only could see that material science or natural science cannot be the science of reality, because she began to see that spirit is real and is reality, and that therefore the only science that would be valuable at all and would have the right to be called a science would have to build on spirit and not on matter. But also at her time, the time when the world began to investigate the mental realm, the psychical realm, she began to see that even the science of the soul, with small s, that psychology, was not the answer to being, that it did not really touch reality, and therefore she lifted even psychology out of the psychic realm and put it into the realm of spirit. That's why she calls in her book The Psychology of Spirit, which is far in advance to the present-day understanding of psychology. We only have today slight indications that psychology is drifting may not be the right term, is evolving towards a science of spirit, especially with Frankl and perhaps with Maslow and so on. We have now, after 100 years, the first hint that the world is perhaps getting ready to accept the new paradigm. But Mrs. Eddy, 100 years ago, already could see that her discovery was the psychology of spirit, and therefore would do away with all facets of psychology. No matter what psychology we mean by it, she just could see that psychology was investigating the human psyche and not the reality of spirit. So in her textbook, actually, we have already all the answers to the various psychologies that came afterwards, that were in use after Mrs. Eddy was here. She could already see that the psychic research that was being done at her time and at our time was not touching really basic reality, that it was still the realm of belief, and therefore she would deal with all these aspects of psychology, like the subconscious, the collective unconscious, like the unconscious, the universal unconscious, the universal archetype, that she would deal with them with one stroke, so to say, showing all his mind and mind's idea. And whatever is not of the divine mind, of that supra-consciousness, that supra-mind, is only the human mind. In whatever form it appears, it doesn't matter, it's always mortal mind. And so she made a clean cut between ordinary psychology and the psychology of spirit. And in this way, it was, at her time, perhaps at least 100 years in advance, if perhaps not 150 years in advance. And if one investigates also this psychology of spirit, one can see that she was far in advance of the development that we can witness over the last 100 years, because at her time the general accepted paradigm was that you have a trinity of mind, body, spirit, or spirit, psyche, body, whatever you can call it, that trinity, that man has, so to say, three aspects. He has a spiritual aspect, he has a mental or psychical aspect, and he has a material aspect, the body, and that this psychological trinity constitutes man. Then little by little, but she already, you see, didn't consider these three as a trinity, but she treated them in a hierarchical way. She could see that the highest of the three was spirit, and spirit would be the only, that spirit would control the psychological, the psyche, the psychological mentality of a man, and that the mentality would control the body. So you have a vertical hierarchy of spirit, psyche, body. This was never accepted until very recently. Only very recently in the psychosomatic medicine they begin to realize that these three are not a trinity, therefore not three on the same level with equal value, but they are actually not horizontally arranged, but vertically arranged. And that is naturally a terrific step forward, because then the investigation will be much more centered toward investigating the one and only cause of all, namely spirit, and then see its impact on the psyche of man, and from the psyche of man the impact on the body of man, on matter. So here we have a terrific advance. And Mrs. Eddy has anticipated that in her textbook 100 years ago.